Sermons from the Journey is an audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Rebecca Clark, pastor at Trinity United Methodist Church in Montpelier, Vermont, and blogging online at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening.
Online, the Forbes magazine list of the most stressful jobs of 2013. So many of us can pray the prayer of the Pharisee and say, thank you, God, that I am not like other people and do not have to do these jobs. There have been times when clergy have been listed as some of the most stressful jobs. They are not on this list, so I guess my job just got less stressful. I don't know. The most stressful jobs this year are the people who report the highest instance of stress in their jobs. At the top of the list are, of course, enlisted military personnel, which we would expect and understand, followed by military generals, which is also quite understandable, and then firefighters, folks who keep us safe in so many ways. They're at the top of the list. Commercial airline pilots, public relations executives, senior corporate executives, who at least are the most highly compensated for their highly stressful jobs of the list.
That's why they get the big bucks.
That is why they get the big bucks. Photojournalists, newspaper reporters, taxi drivers, and police officers. Not making the list is profit. However, I think it should be at the top of the list. I think we don't think of it as a job description anymore. But in the time of the Hebrew Bible and in the time of the New Testament, profit was a job. And it was a job that came without benefits and with incredible amounts of stress and very, very little, if any, thanks. When we think of prophets, we think of folks like Jeremiah or the prophets of the Hebrew Bible, many of whom were quite unpopular in their day, quite unpopular among the people to whom they spoke. And then we think of prophets in the New Testament. We think of Jesus. We think of those who followed Jesus and began to spread the word in his legacy of Peter and Paul. And then we think throughout the years of martyrs and visionaries and leaders and prophets. We think of perhaps Joan of Arc. I think of Gandhi, who, of a different faith, followed a spiritual calling deeply rooted in his call from God. I think of Martin Luther King Jr. I think of Mother Teresa. Anyone think of a prophet, of a person who has followed God's call? Those are some good ones, right? Albert Schweitzer. Okay, there we go. Because I was noticing that on my list, Mother Teresa's the only one who died of old age, which is a little bit disturbing.
Did you say Joan of Arc?
I did say Joan of Arc, yeah. Yeah. But people who have this powerful call from God, right? It's an occupational hazard living that out. It's a difficulty, a challenge living that out. And I imagine a job that comes with a tremendous amount of stress. That wonderful passage from Jeremiah, which speaks so beautifully to me, to that sense of being called to God's service, not to be a prophet in the way that Jeremiah was, or hopefully that Joan of Arc was, but to be one who speaks for and lives for God, this sense that God calls us before we're born, that God has a ministry for which we are intended, a way in which we are going to give of ourselves to the world before we even draw breath. In this passage from Jeremiah, God promises to be with Jeremiah. Jeremiah says, oh, but you know, I'm young. I can't do what you've called me to do. And God says, don't be afraid on account of other people and what they might say or do. I've appointed you as a prophet and I will be with you. We might be tempted to think that this means that Jeremiah is going to have some smooth sailing. This means that people are going to be rejoicing, just thrilled to hear what Jeremiah has to say. People were not thrilled to hear what Jeremiah has to say. It wasn't particularly good news much of the time. We might be tempted to think that this is God's promise to make the way for the prophets easy, the path for those who will serve God and live out their ministry in God's name without bump or hiccup or difficulty. Make the reception always good. Make the results always immediately fruitful. And so in the tradition of those Hebrew Bible prophets who met with some pretty bad reception and had some pretty rocky roads, not the good kind that come in pints of ice cream, but the other kind of rocky roads, and had difficulty and faced struggle and often hostile reception on the part of the people around them. Perhaps they had some bad luck because, you know, they weren't God's chosen child, God's beloved. And so maybe Jesus fared a bit better. And so having gone home to his home meeting place, having been handed the scroll of the prophet Isaiah and reading these beautiful words about liberating the captives and preaching good news to the poor and declaring the year of God's favor, of Jubilee, Jesus says, this is what is being fulfilled in your hearing. And people immediately start grumbling about him. Well, we know who he is. We remember what he was like as a kid. This is one of the problems of growing up in a small town, right? Everybody remembers what you're like. Everybody judges you by your parents or your older siblings or your friends or your family of origin. And so they start to kind of grumble about him. We knew you as a kid. Doesn't matter what you do as a grown-up. You can't outlive the fact that you used to crawl under the pews, or that you misbehaved during church, or that you were the donkey in the nativity play when you were four, which is a true story about a young man who must now be out of college from the first church I served. And when I met him, he was entering high school, but everybody told me he had been the cutest donkey ever in the nativity play. Like 10 years earlier. You can never outlive that stuff. So Jesus can't rise above the reputation or the expectation that they have based on his family. And so as they grumble, he says to them, well, nobody's really, really accepted, really, really loved and received well by their hometown. And then he gives them a couple of examples. Examples of ways in which that's okay, because God may not necessarily be calling the prophet to speak to his or her hometown. And so Jesus gives these examples of times in which God's grace, God's blessing, God's abundance was needed by the people of Israel, by God's chosen people, and yet God's prophets spoke to those outside the fold. Jesus tells them essentially that it's okay if you don't like me. It's okay if you're not ready to hear what I have to say, because maybe God's speaking to someone outside the fold. What I have come to do is for people beyond the people of Israel. And this does not go well. This does not meet with good reception. This meets with very, very bad reception. God, who has promised to be with the prophets, seemingly abandons the people, or Jesus, in hearing this message. And they become angry, very angry. So angry that they want to take him out of town and throw him off a cliff. One might ask, perhaps not at this moment, but later, 2-3 years down the line, oh God, why have you forsaken your chosen one? Those who come at Jesus with murderous intent were not successful that day, but they would come again and often. And they would eventually be successful, if only for a day and a half or so, by the time you bury him and he shows up missing. But they would be successful for a very short time. And we might wonder at why that is. But instead, when Jesus is surrounded by these people who have come at him with rage, with murderous rage, with hostile intent, he somehow slips between them and walks away. Jesus is not afraid of them. It doesn't say that he engages in some Hollywood-style chase scene where he daringly outwits them and outsmarts them and outruns them. He seemingly calmly somehow just slips from their midst and disappears. Jesus is indeed not afraid because God is with him. But that did not make his reception any better. That did not change the hearts of the people to whom he was speaking. That did not take away their hostile and murderous intent or make it end in that moment, for it would rear its head again. And so I submit to you that it's not a promise. God's promise to be with the prophets, God's promise to be with us, is not a promise that there won't be times of fear. It's not a promise that there won't be bad reception when we try to live out the call that we've been given. It's not a promise that the road will be smooth and the way will be easy. And I think we can be tempted by that thought. We can hear and feel and discern a call to do something, to live out our ministry, to serve God in a particular way. And then we begin to live into that, and the going gets rough, and we might be tempted to think that that's a sign. The fact that the going got rough is a sign. The fact that we receive bad reception is a sign that we have misunderstood God, that God does not bless what we are doing, that we should give up. We must not have understood correctly. Because the people to whom we thought God was sending us are not hearing what we have to say, or are not receiving the gift of our love poured out to them. Because the way that we thought we were called to live and to serve God has become difficult and painful. There are obstacles. There are people who undermine. There are emotional setbacks. But I believe we err when we think God's blessing comes with, God's promise of presence comes with the assurance of ease, the assurance of good reception. It didn't for Jesus. It didn't for the prophets. Unfortunately, it doesn't for us. God's promise is not that people won't come at us with hostile intent, but that in the face of it, we might calmly, non-reactively, non-anxiously, pass from their midst and walk away. God's promise is not that there won't be people enraged or upset when we try to authentically live the call we've been given. Not that people will suddenly hear us say, "Hey, folks, the blessing of God is not just for the people inside the chosen family of Israel or the chosen family of the Methodist Church or the chosen family of whoever we think it is." God's promise is not that people are going to be thrilled to hear those words or the message we've been given. God's promise is that we will have the courage, that we will have the calmness and the strength to walk away from, to overcome the obstacles, the stumbling blocks, the places of resistance, the bad reception. When God tells us not to be afraid, that doesn't mean don't be afraid because you'll never have a reason to be. It means don't be afraid, because in the face of all that is fearful, I am with you. And so when we have discerned a calling, a purpose, a way forward that we believe God has called us to be, that does not mean that all the doors are open and all the ways are made plain for us. That means that we have a person, a presence, a partner, a creator, a sustainer on the journey with us. And that as we walk forward, we need not be afraid, but calmly slip from the places of bad reception and carry on where we are called. May we have the courage and the conviction, the strength of heart, and the assurance of God's presence to do so. Amen.